warm, but it will be milder than average pretty much all week. For today, cloudy with a little rain at times. However, it's freezing this morning, so watch for icy areas. This afternoon, the high 38. Periods of rain tonight, low 35. Tomorrow, mostly cloudy with a shower, rain or snow shower in spots. Well, inland, but most areas just having a rain shower. High 39. And Wednesday, partly sunny, high 41. For AccuWeather, I'm meteorologist Elliot Abrams on your radio friend, WRJF.
Be careful out there, folks. It's got some freezing rainfall, and we've got 31 degrees across the board. Kenosha, Burlington, at Milwaukee's Mitchell International Airport, and here in Racine at Magnum.media's international headquarters. The wind is out of the south at 3 miles an hour. We've got some fog going on. The dew point is at 27, and the relative humidity is 85%. The barometric pressure continues to fall. It is at 30.27 right now. It's 9 minutes until 9 o'clock. This is Glenn Klein for Mike Clemens on Martin Luther King Jr. Day 2017, and we are honored to welcome back to our microphones for a community conversation, and he'll be with us all hour in the 9 o'clock hour, as well as David Mack. Please say hello to pastor, civil rights leader, author of the great book, The Only One in the Room, Milton Thompson. Happy MLK Jr. Day, Milt.
Happy Martin Luther King Day to you, too, Glenn.
What do you do to celebrate, besides go to the local fast food establishment with your supersized drink in front of you?
What's funny is Martin Luther King had such an impact on my life, starting with when I was a child and watching the civil rights movement, that it's not a matter of commemorating a day. It's a matter of committing to the kind of racial relationships, the respect that he fostered between races, and trying to live that way.
Do you know that he was not born Martin Luther King Jr.?
No, I did not.
His birth name was Michael King Jr., and his dad was Michael King Sr., and in 1934, Martin Luther King Jr.'s dad went to Germany and was so inspired by the story of the reformer Martin Luther that he changed his name to Martin Luther King Sr. and changed his son's name to Martin Luther King Jr.
Wow, that's a fascinating story.
Yeah.
Not surprising, though. What an intelligent family. Not just Martin Luther King Jr. Martin Luther King Sr. was quite an imposing person, too.
Yeah, he was a good preacher.
Yep. Phenomenal, from what I understand.
And I'm really glad they changed the name, because Michael King Jr. just doesn't have the same ring to it.
No, it doesn't.
Martin Luther King Jr. does.
No, it doesn't.
And then when he was growing up, he was not into religion. He wasn't into Christianity. He claimed at 13 years old, did Martin Luther King Jr., he denied the bodily resurrection of Jesus during Sunday school. And from this point, as a young man, he said, "My doubts began to spring forth unrelentingly. However, he later concluded that the Bible has many profound truths which one cannot escape." And that's when he decided to go into the family business and entered the seminary.
Well, that's good. That's good. And what he said is true. The Bible does have many profound truths. And I believe, you know, people have downplayed some segments of Christianity, argued over whether Martin Luther King was evangelical or not. Mm-hmm. And that argument had played through. And in reality, once you read what he said and other things, you came to the conclusion that it wasn't just about the social gospel to him, but that it was beyond that. That he had a legitimate faith in God, and that that's what motivated. Think about the civil rights movement, and think about the role of pastors in the civil rights movement. The church, the black churches, had a prominent role in that. They set the moral tone for the civil rights movement. And when that ceased to happen, then you have people like Stokely Carmichael and others who then have prominent roles in a lot of the moral high ground that you saw changes. And the movement changes from nonviolent to where you start to see violence being a tool used to try to move things along as well.
Of course, Martin Luther King Jr. used as a role model Mahatma Gandhi and his peaceful rebellion against Great Britain and India. And it was a really a remarkable decision. And the fact that the African-American community in this country was willing to adhere to that nonviolent, peaceful protest to eventually lead to the civil rights legislation passed by the Democrats and Republicans. A lot of people don't realize that the Republicans were very, very instrumental mm-hmm. working with Lyndon Baines Johnson to pass that civil rights legislation. The Dixiecrats filibustered it in the Senate.
Right, right. People need to understand that for the longest time from Lincoln on, the Republicans were the party of civil rights, and that the Democrats were pretty much, especially the Democrats in the South, were segregationist. You know, they were not the friends of black people. So, you know, I don't know when that started to flip. Probably some of the things that were done by Truman and desegregating the armed services and other things started moving the needle for the Democrats.
Well, the big one, and it's demonstrated in this movie all the way, about not only LBJ's attempt to, and successful attempt, to pass civil rights legislation after the assassination of John Kennedy, but also Martin Luther King's role in that, significant role, and is portrayed beautifully in the movie. But after it's passed, then Strom Thurmond goes from being a Dixiecrat, a Democrat, to a Republican, and that started the ball rolling. And mm-hmm. and all the former segregationists started becoming Republicans in opposition to what LBJ, as the head of his party, the Democratic Party, did as president.
Yeah, what a shame. You know, what a shame when you sit there and you think about the fact that we even had to have a civil rights movement, and that even though the Constitution said that black people had the right to vote and equal protection under the law and all of that, that the reality of what the Republicans, the radical Republicans following the Civil War, because they put all of that in place, that it took into the 60s for some of that to become a reality. And then I would contend that in reality, things like school desegregation and the outworking of the civil rights movement really didn't take hold until the 70s. And when you talk about fair housing and other things, some of that didn't take hold until the 80s. See, people tend to think that when Martin Luther King, when his work was done, when he was assassinated, oh, good, it all got finished. And it didn't get finished. As a matter of fact, the thing that really, in retrospect and thinking about his life, I was thinking about the I Have a Dream speech. And in my opinion, one of two of the greatest speeches given in the history of this country, that and the Gettysburg Address, I would put, and you can choose one and two. But I look at that and I look at when that was given and people go, well, then that's the apex. The whole country must have gotten behind civil rights. And to be honest with you, it wasn't until 1965, the March on Selma, where people, because of TV, could see the dogs biting the protesters and all of that peaceful protesters and the fire hose washing people down the street. That as inspirational as the I Have a Dream speech was, it didn't move the needle. It was watching people get abused only because they were black and because they were asking for the rights that the Constitution had guaranteed them. That's what moved the needle, because from 65 on, you start to see a real change in the attitudes of people in this country, including people in the North, because Northerners, we make it sound like the Southerners, they cornered the market on racism. When I was growing up, my father wanted to buy a house on the avenue that has the boulevard. I can't remember if it's Blaine, over on the north side by Horlick Athletic Field. It was only about 4 or 5 blocks from where we lived. And he could not buy the house, though he had the money, he had the job. My mother and my father were working because of housing discrimination. And so, you know, what Martin Luther King did and what the civil rights movement did had an impact on my life, even though I'm a northern kid, because stuff was still going on for quite a while, even after the Civil Rights Movement.
And still is.
And still is.
I mean, this past weekend with the Civil Rights patron saint, John Lewis, who was at that Selma march with Martin mm-hmm. Luther King, came out and said the incoming president is not a legitimate president. And there was all kinds of ramifications surrounding race with President-elect Trump's tweet response to that. We'll talk about that on the other side. We'll also be joined by David Mack. He's got an interesting perspective on race as we celebrate Martin Luther King Jr. Day in 2017.
Your radio friend is on AM 1400 WRJN Racine, FM 98.1 Kenosha, and FM 99.9 Racine.
After WRJN covers the world.
Political storm in D.C., ice storm in the plains. I'm John Trout.
Milder than average pretty much all week. For today, cloudy with a little rain at times. However, it's freezing this morning, so watch for icy areas. This afternoon, the high 38. Periods of rain tonight, low 35. Tomorrow, mostly cloudy with a shower, rain or snow shower in spots. Well, inland, but most areas just having a rain shower. High 39. And Wednesday, partly sunny, high 41. Racky weather. I'm meteorologist Elliot Abrams on your radio friend, WRJN.
Good times, EA. Good times. We've got freezing rain in Kenosha. It is 31 degrees. The same at the municipal airport in Burlington and 29. At Milwaukee's Mitchell International Airport, it is freezing. Literally 32 degrees with freezing rain falling. And at Magnum.media's international headquarters in Racine at WRJN, delightful out. Freezing rain, 31 degrees. We've got a wind chill index of 26 being produced by a southerly wind at 5 miles an hour. The dew point is at 27 degrees, the relative humidity 85%, and the barometric pressure is steady eddy at 30.27. It's 11 minutes after 9 o'clock, and good morning. It's a beautiful day in Wisconsin for, thank God, it's Monday, January 16, 2017, the only Martin Luther King Jr. Day 2017 in the history of the United States of America. Let us choose on purpose, with a purpose, to come together.
Now that your picture's in the paper being perfectly admired, you can have anyone that you have ever desired. All you gotta tell me now is why, why.
We'll make the dream become a reality. I know we will. Because our hearts tell us so.
The great Stevie Wonder with his homage to Martin Luther King Jr.'s birthday on your radio friend. 18 minutes after 9 o'clock, and greetings, you beautiful humans. This is your friendly neighborhood radio talk show host, play-by-play man, and color analyst for life, all wrapped up into one nice, neat, lovable package. Glenn Klein on Martin Luther King Day 2017. And in the studio with us to talk about the current state of civil rights, their own personal experience as well, please welcome back to WRJN the local civil rights leader and the author of the book on race, the only one in the room, Milt Thompson's back. Hey, Milt.
Hey, Glenn.
And please say hello to our local civic leader, and he's got an interesting personal experience and take on race, Mr. David Mack. Good morning, David.
Good morning, Glenn.
How art thou?
I am doing well, and thanks for caring enough to ask.
Appreciate that. So when we were talking last week, David, and you are an avid listener and a great guest on the Power Rotation in this quality radio station, you said that while you listen to Milt frequently talk about race in his book, The Only One in the Room, that you, as a Caucasian American, have often been the only one in the room on the other side. Please explain to the beautiful humans your situation and your unique experience.
All right, but first I'll qualify by saying, although you may not notice it when you look at me, I am mixed race. My grandfather was born on a Native American reservation up in northwestern Minnesota, and so come from a blended family, if you might say. He came to Racine, married my grandmother, and had a large family. But you know, it's interesting. Having grown up, I was drawn to Martin Luther King Jr. and the things that he had to say and his oratorical abilities, and so it was something that I've been passionate about. And when I married my wife Amy, whose father and grandfather were migrant workers, here again it brought a unique perspective into our family. But it was early in my career. I was working with a gal that went to a local church here, Greater Mount Eagle, and they were having a Just Between Friends concert. And so my friend at work invited my wife, who is a vocalist, to come and sing with their choir. So there, my wife was the lightest one in the choir, and it was just a real great experience. And the next year, there were a few more people that weren't part of the church that became part of it. But that's not really that's kind of where the story begins, but not where it ends. A couple of years after that, I just felt like we should take our family to one of our local African-American churches on Sunday evenings for their services. And Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. used to say that the most segregated hour is 11 o'clock on Sunday morning. Sure. And this service was actually at, 6 o'clock in the evening. But we went over to Greater Grace Temple Church of God in Christ, similar to the church that we attended, except it was predominantly black. Ours was predominantly white. And we were sitting in the back row. And I was expecting to hear some fiery preaching, maybe that sing song with the organ, you know, punching, you know, behind the pastor. I was there expecting to hear, you know, a gospel choir and, you know, all that stuff that you would find in a black church. And they were sitting there watching a videotape. And the focus that night was how they as a congregation could reach out to people different than them, primarily white folk. And there we were sitting in the back row.
Fascinating.
Well, we became instant celebrities at that point, but it also developed into a long-lasting friendship with a core group of guys from that church. And we did a lot of things, you know, for about 5 years around that time frame that this was all going. They came along with a group from my church at the time to a group, this Promise Keepers conference that was going on around the country. And so we did that for several years, where we'd share hotel rooms, all load up into a van, and you know, had a mixed group of guys going to that. We'd go down to Chicago and just bum around for a day, and you know, just had some good times. But we were also able to develop a relationship. We were also able to develop a friendship, and we were able to talk frankly with each other without fearing that we were going to say something politically incorrect and offend the other person. And that, I think, is essential and important, because if you don't have that ability to be able to speak frankly and ask questions and not worry about making a mistake, you're never going to actually get to know somebody, nor are you going to really understand what the issues are out there. And anybody that is looking to develop cross-cultural relationships, things like that, it really comes down to the foundation of getting to know somebody first. It was interesting, because we were recently talking, my wife and I, with somebody who wanted to get to know and understand the minority community better. And he mentioned that there was a program or a workshop out there. My wife looked at me, and my wife's Hispanic, Mexican-American, and she says, "Where do I sign up for a class on how to understand white people?" But yet, there are all these classes out there on how to understand Hispanics, how to understand African-Americans, how to understand all these various groups. And actually, when you sit back and look at it, foundationally, it's getting in the room together and just sitting down and developing relationships like you and Milt have done over coffee and breaking bread.
He is David Mack. This is Glenn Klein along with Milt Thompson. It is Martin Luther King Jr. Day in the United States. This is WRJN Community Conversation. So when you hear at least a guy that looks white talk like that, how does that make you feel on Martin Luther King Jr. Day?
Oh, it makes me feel great because you and I have talked about everything that David just said. It's in order to establish relationships with people, first of all, there has to be a foundation of respect. And then really, if you're going to have meaningful relationships, you have to be willing to give trust too, even sight unseen. Because if your whole mentality is, I'm holding everything close to the vest and you're going to have to earn my trust before I really tell you anything that's personal or anything that's meaningful, then you're not going to move very far when it comes to race relations, because at some point you're going to have to decide that the goal of knowing the other person is more important than being easily offended and all the other things. It's funny, when I was in college, and I was in college in the early 70s, two of my roommates, one was from Argyle, Wisconsin, another was from Evansville, Wisconsin. And in all likelihood, they'd probably never seen or been in close contact with a black person. And we'd sit up till the wee hours of the morning talking about things. We'd go out together. We'd do all of these things and got to know each other. And we talk about race, and it was no holes barred. And, you know, with the understanding that it was a two-way conversation, that I thought that every white person out in, you know, outside of the city and in Wisconsin, outside of the urban areas, all of them are farmers. And, you know, I almost insulted one of my roommates. I said, "You're from Argyle. Is that where they make the socks?" You know, and he never answered the question. So I don't know if that's where they make Argyle socks. But, you know, there's a certain degree of naivete and ignorance, and that's good. As long as you're dealing with people of goodwill who are not easily offended, then you have no problem. And it's funny. There are whites and blacks who are easily offended about everything, who, if you put me in a room with them, and I'm a pretty open person, I would pull back. Because in the climate in which we live, you can't say anything.
Well, and that's a shame because I had a personal experience a couple of years ago where we saw this play out. And now there's this thing called coding or whatever, where when you use certain terms like diversity, it's a code word for, things that would have been offensive years ago, at risk, you know. Now is a code word for blacks and Hispanics versus, you know, all kids that that might be in an at-risk, you know, population for failure and things like that. So that was kind of like, okay, so these sociologists, probably usually white sociologists, are in some college ivory tower pontificating and trying to understand this whole complex idea of race and white privilege and all this other stuff. And I'm not saying there isn't such a thing as white privilege. I'm not saying that, certain people have advantages sometimes because of the color of their skin and whatnot. But this politically correct environment that we live in now reaches a point where you're damned if you do, damned if you don't. I apologize if I can't say that on radio,
it really
comes down to, you know, we're far too sensitive in this world now, and that's not a good thing because I think it pushes us further behind versus ahead.
When I was growing up, it's funny, some of the best Pollock jokes that I learned were from Frank Michalowski. Frank, hello if you're listening, or from people that I went to school with who were Italians who told me jokes that were racially or ethnically insensitive. But growing up in Racine, I went to school with people from a variety of ethnicities. And, you know, think of this. One of my favorite movies is Blazing Saddles. And I love Mel Brooks. You could never make a movie like that because you could never kid about race, even in that kind of fashion. Not only that, I found out a year ago, Hogan's Heroes, many of the actors on Hogan's Heroes were Jewish and were some of them were Holocaust survivors.
That's right.
And they said they'd be on the show only if Colonel Klink and the Nazis and all, only if their plans always failed. But think about that. You could not do a show like that today because of the environment.
And it reminds me of that famous bit that Richard Pryor did on Saturday Night Live, that when they just celebrated their 40th anniversary, they played that bit, but they had to put a warning before they played it. It was very racially charged and a very funny bit, but you could never air that in its original form without a warning in 2016. Well, a mixed white Native American and a black guy and a Jewish guy were on the radio. It's not a joke. It's really happening, and it's Martin Luther King Jr. Day. This is Glenn Klein. The great Tom Karku is on the other side, and then we will continue our commemoration and our discussion of Martin Luther King Jr.'s legacy and race in America in 2017 after a potentially award-winning newscast from the great Tom Karku momentarily.
Winter blahs setting in. Holiday hangover hitting your pocketbook a little hard.
RJ and Acme, the forecast. It's not going to be exceptionally warm, but it will be milder than average pretty much all week, and we expect it to last into early next week. However, some very cold air is building up in Alaska and Siberia. It looks like a portion of that is going to come our way after that, so certainly winter is not over. For today, cloudy with a little rain at times. This afternoon, the high 38. Periods of rain tonight, low 35. Tomorrow, mostly cloudy with a shower, rain or snow shower in spots. Well, inland, but most areas just having a rain shower, high 39. Then Wednesday, partly sunny, high 41. For AccuWeather, I'm meteorologist Elliot Abrams on your radio friend, WRJN.
Winter certainly is not over. Right now, Kenosha, 31 degrees. We have 42 in Burlington. Milwaukee, 32, 31 in Racine. We're reporting light freezing rain in many areas at this hour. I'm Tom Karku, WRJN News.
Good times, good times.
Uh-huh.
Happy Martin Luther King Jr. Day.
Yes, sir.
What are you doing to commemorate?
Working.
We didn't get the day off.
No.
A lot of people do have the day off.
Some do.
We're talking about that with Milt Thompson, who's here with David Mack. And we were talking before we went on microphone that when you were a school superintendent, there were school districts, and still are, that don't give the day off. It's a federal holiday.
Yeah.
What do you think about that as a African-American man and a civil rights leader?
Boy, I think it should be not only a federal holiday. I think that everyone should just agree that it's a holiday, that it's a day off. School districts should not be in session. I think that it would highlight the importance of the man and the man's vision and his life. And by not doing that, they're pretty much making a statement, though, you know, you could debate on whether it's intentional or not, that it doesn't warrant that kind of gravity to give employees and people a day off.
And because by not doing it, there's a racial component to it.
When you think about when the day was first proposed and all the controversy back and forth, because there were states that said, we don't care, we're just not going to do it. And that race was the undertone on that. It had to be, because when you think of Martin Luther King, there are very few Americans who had the impact upon this country that he had, including there are many presidents we've had who did not have the kind of impact.
I would say most presidents have the impact
that
MLK Jr. did.
So, you know, and let's face it. When you look at the history of this country, you look at hundreds of years of not just discrimination, but of slavery and that kind of thing. you know,
and throwing, that kind of thing.
Yeah, but you know, but throwing black people a bone, you know, hey, out of all the holidays we get one, then, you know, and I'm not, you know, I'm sort of making fun, but really, why should it be a big deal to have this holiday and then, again, not have schools in session? Yeah. That used to drive me up a wall.
David, what do you think it is about people like yourself who are drawn to reconciliation and to meeting people of different backgrounds and I in that same category, and people that just don't want to have anything to do with somebody not from their neighborhood or their skin color or their ethnicity?
You know, I think a lot of it has to do with the eras that we grow up. And if you look at, there were a few old timers growing up that used the N-word. I remember a neighbor, an old farm lady, and blatantly racist, and sit around the kitchen table and she'd talk about how, you know, it was wrong for a black person and a white person to marry, and how could you wake up the next morning and look at a, and she'd use the N-word.
Mm-hmm.
And but that was few and far between. I didn't grow up in a household that used that word, but I didn't also grow up in a household that where my parents had a lot of people over and different types of people. But if you look at the era that I grew up in, and integration started when I was in the fourth grade at Jersted Agerholm School, and we thought, oh, what's the big deal? You know, kids are kids. And we didn't really see a difference between black and white. It really wasn't that type of an issue. And then if you looked at the TV shows that were on when I was growing up and the impact that television has, the Cosby Show, portraying African Americans in a completely different light, and the whole bit, compared to my own children. So I grew up in an era where I think a lot of those attitudes were softening, where it was no big deal to have black and Hispanic friends. The racism that you saw, at least the overt racism, wasn't there like it may have been in the 50s and the early 60s.
It may not be overt, but it's still very much there. When President Obama became president in 2009, 23% or 22% of Americans said that race relationships were bad or poor and getting worse. As he leaves office this week, 63% of Americans say that race relationships have devolved and are poor or bad.
I do something for Leadership Racine where we show a movie called Shadows of Hate. And I like Shadows of Hate. It's put out by the Southern Poverty Law and Justice Center because it doesn't look at race relations as a black-white issue. It looks at the various groups in the United States that have been subject to hatred, from Native Americans to Hispanics to Irish to different waves of immigration that have come in. And you look at our history as a nation, and it's very poor. And I think if you look at what is behind hate, it's fear. It's the majority fearing losing something. And so I don't disagree that that racism is more subtle. I don't necessarily think it's as rampant as it was in the 60s. I think we've evolved.
Well, there's no doubt about
right.
it. But it's still very much intrinsic.
Right.
Even this past weekend, where mm-hmm. John Lewis, the patron saint of the civil rights movement, an icon in this country, the congressman from Georgia, he sits down with Chuck Todd of MSNBC and NBC's Meet the Press, and says that Donald Trump is an illegitimate president because of the Russian involvement in the hacking. And our president-elect tweets out in response to that Congressman John Lewis should spend more time on fixing and helping his district, which is in horrible shape and falling apart, not to mention crime-infested, rather than falsely complaining about the election results. All talk, 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 no actions or results sad. That's from Donald John Trump. Mm-hmm. Now, I did not read in that any reference to race or to the civil rights movement, but that's how it was taken in the media, that they said, oh, John Lewis, just talk, no result. And then, of course, they showed the video of the protest and Bloody Sunday at Selma in referencing, see, that Trump was making a racial statement, taking something that was political, because John Lewis never mentioned race.
Right.
Donald Trump never mentioned race, but now it's a racial issue like everything else.
Yeah. Unfortunately, that's where we're at in the country. Anything and everything that can be construed as race-based is going to be taken that way. The other thing is this. Every criticism or any criticism of a prominent person who happens to be black is not racism. You know, think of this. People say, well, they treated Obama horribly during his 8 years. Well, being a Republican, I can tell you I was around during the 8 years of George W. Bush.
Or Ronald Reagan.
Right. And I've heard such despicable things said about...
But Obama is black. And so any criticism of President Obama could easily be turned into a racial issue. Well, so Trump then responds, because it was a heated response from mm-hmm. the Democrats and from progressives in the left. And then he sends another beauty out. And he says, Congressman John Lewis should finally focus on the burning and crime-infested inner cities of the U.S. I can use all the help I can get. And then a Republican congressman, this guy Justin Amash from Michigan, this guy's a Republican. Here was his tweet, and this was a beautiful response. He said, dude, just stop.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's no winning for the president-elect on this. What he should have said is something to the effect, I so respect the contribution that Congressman John Lewis has made to our country and to civil rights in this country, and I hope he will reconsider coming to the inauguration and help bring this country together. But he can't do it.
No.
He doesn't know the route called the high road, president-elect. I'll tell you one thing that really thrills my heart is when sports is so intrinsic in our society, and it has been in race relationships, going back to Jesse Owens and, of course, Jackie Robinson mm-hmm. breaking the color barrier in baseball in 1947. What thrills me is when I see an African-American kid in a white player's jersey, because you always see white kids in African-American jerseys, like LeBron James or whomever.
Hank Aaron. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But when you see a black kid in an Aaron Rodgers jersey, for example, I think that says so much about progress that they would put that on without even thinking twice about it, because Aaron Rodgers is one of their heroes too.
Yeah, that's good.
And he proved it again last week, or yesterday, I should say, did number 12 in your roster and number one in our heart, Aaron Rodgers of your now division champion, Green Bay Packers, headed to Hotlanta.
From Wisconsin Radio Network Sports, this is the Titletown Report. Now, with the latest from Lambeau, here's Bill Scott.
The Packers extended their winning streak to 8 games with a 34-31 win over the Dallas Cowboys. They're headed to the NFC Championship in Atlanta this Sunday. It was Aaron Rodgers and the cast of offensive role players early, and then the Packers turned things over to Mason Crosby late. The Texas native had never made 2 50-yard field goals in a game before. But yesterday, Crosby hit 56 and 51-yard field goals within 93 seconds late in the game, the second of which won it for the Packers.
It was unreal. I mean, when we have 35 seconds on the clock and that our offense can move the ball into field goal range and a manageable kick. You know, that's just special. I mean, Aaron and then and Jared making that catch. I mean, that's what this team's been doing now, for the last 8 weeks.
Packers got the ball back at their own 25 with 35 seconds left to play, and based on history, you just knew they had a chance to get into Crosby's range. Quarterback Aaron Rodgers.
For Mace to hit those two kicks, I mean, he's the best kicker in the league, and he's got to do it outdoors for much of the season. It's just incredible.
That's 22 straight made field goals for Crosby. I'll have more after this.
This is the city where danger lurks. Today, a new creature walks among us, causing fear, mayhem, and injury.
Stay back, children.
Mommy, I'm scared.
Look out for the dreaded digital deadwalkers. They're not looking out for you. With faces pressed against their little handheld devices, they put all good citizens in harm's way.
Hey, pal. Pardon you.
The digital deadwalkers are multiplying. Until their behavior patterns can be modified, the American Academy of Orthopedic Surgeons warns all innocent people to stay alert. Better yet, to step up and speak out.
Hey, dude, I'm walking here.
Sorry, I didn't see you.
A public service message.
The Packers improved to 12-6, winning as 5.5-point underdogs on Sunday.
This is a outstanding victory for us. Our focus is obviously now onto Atlanta and the goal that I think every team has when a season starts. And we're two steps away from achieving greatness.
That's Mike McCarthy. I'll have more from Titletown later on the Wisconsin Radio Network.
Kenosha County Executive Jim Cruiser won his football brat bet with Glenn Klein. And this Tuesday morning at 11 o'clock, it's time for Glenn to pay up live in studio right here on your radio friend, WRJN. Being the good sport that he is, Glenn's going to do it right with a quality brat. How will he do it? With a brat from Danny's Meats and Catering at 1317 4 Mile Road, Racine. Right now, Danny's has bratwursts on sale for just $2.99 a pound. See it all at dannysmeats.com.
I'm hungry already. 10 minutes until 10 o'clock. It is Martin Luther King Day. On your radio, friend Glenn Klein, along with Milt Thompson and David Mack. I know, Dave, you got to get out of here.
Yeah, take the wife to the chiropractor.
Amy needs an adjustment.
Yes.
Many people think I need an adjustment from the neck up.
All right. Well, we were talking about what makes, why am I passionate about this? And I was talking about generations, and I look at my children's generation, and my daughter's best friend in kindergarten through high school was an African-American girl. And it was interesting because when they hit middle school, some of the African-American kids started giving this girl a hard time. Why are you friends with her? Why are you friends with her? But these kids didn't see color. And I look at my kids, and they've grown up with the United Nations circle of friends. Black, Hispanic,
your
Asian.
Daughter's married to an African American.
My daughter's married to an African American. Gay, the whole bit. So for them, it's no big deal. 5 years ago, I took my daughter to the Civil Rights Museum in Memphis, Tennessee, and we're making our way to the end of the exhibits.
That's where at the site where MLK Jr. was
exactly. It's
assassinated.
It's the old motel there, and I'm hearing. There's a video of Martin Luther King giving his last speech. I've been to the mountaintop. I've seen the promised land. And you're hearing off to the side strains of Mahalia Jackson singing, "Precious Lord, Take My Hand." And tears are welling up in my eyes because that is one of my favorite speeches. And that is one of my favorite songs by just a fantastic singer. And I look over. And there's the room that Martin Luther King stayed in that night. And I look out, and there was the balcony. And now, I'm holding, choking up. I'm holding back the tears. And I look at my daughter. And I said, "Do you feel anything?" "No." For them, they don't understand what that struggle was about. And here again, I was born in 1966. So I was not there during that struggle, those formative years, but a difference in generation. This younger generation doesn't understand what the big deal was. And so it's important to keep Dr. King's dream alive. It's important to share those stories, but we can't dwell in the past. We need to look towards the future. And things have gotten better. Although I talked about Leadership Racine, and I ask every year, have we made progress? And after Obama got elected, they said yes. And over the last 8 years, sadly, that attitude has shifted again. So there's a lot of work to do. It's not over. It's not finished. But go out and make friends with people different than yourselves.
On purpose.
On purpose.
That's right. All right, Dave. Well, you got to purposely get out because you got to go take Amy. And then, you know what they say, Dave. If mama ain't happy, ain't nobody happy. Thanks for coming in.
All right.
There he goes, David Mack. This is Glenn Klein along with Milt Thompson on WRJN's Community Conversation. Here is Milt Brian Cranston playing Lyndon Baines Johnson as he makes the announcement that he is going to push forward with the just recently assassinated John F. Kennedy's plans for civil rights.
We have talked long enough in this country about civil rights. We have talked for 100 years or more. It is time now to write the next chapter in the books of law. I urge you to enact President Kennedy's civil rights bill into law so that we can eliminate from this nation every trace of discrimination that is based upon race or color.
That, of course, was LBJ's speech before the joint House and Senate, right after JFK was assassinated. And there was Martin Luther King Jr. you could see in the film. That's from the movie I've been telling you about.
Right.
And you've committed to
watching it
by spring training. Why spring training? I don't know.
That was a nice arbitrary.
It gives you enough time to. Remember I talked to you about LBJ's response after the fact. He's getting fitted now for a suit in the Oval Office. This is after the speech. And he's talking to Hubert Humphrey. And listen to how he refers to Dick Gregory and what he says to Humphrey about what Humphrey needs to do, as well as the Democrats, in order to help him pass the legislation. And this is very, very telling. We're talking about how times have changed and how attitudes have changed. When we were just talking with David Mack, how much more work we have to do. But listen to how he describes the comedian Dick Gregory and what Gregory's response was after LBJ's historic speech.
You hear what that Negro comedian Dick Gregory said about me? When Lyndon Johnson finished his speech, 20 million Negroes unpacked.
Well, it was a fine speech, Mr. President, dear to my heart, but I know some people are wondering, did he really mean it?
Well, you could tell that liberal crowd of yours, and I'm going to out Lincoln. But you need to get behind me because, you know, Dick Russell and the Dixiecrats are going to fight me tooth and nail on the civil rights stuff. They're not too tight.
He's going to fight me tooth and nail on the civil rights stuff.
Mm-hmm.
This is the guy that pushed equality through the federal government for African Americans.
Yeah.
And he refers to Dick Gregory, the African American comedian, as that Negro comedian, Dick Gregory.
Oh, yeah. See, that being a little older than David and having grown up during that period of time, I can tell you that doesn't shock me. It doesn't surprise me. Human beings are flawed. And
you got that figured out, Pastor, do you?
I got that figured out after years of observation. And part of the flaw is this. Think of it. You had a Texan who was a Southerner who had, let's face it, Negro was probably not the only N-word that he ever used, and yet he was the one more aggressively than John Kennedy pushing forth civil rights legislation. And yet, in private, let's face it, did he have conversations that would be racist? You bet he did. He was, to a degree, a product of his environment. Growing up in Texas, black people were not considered equal or those kinds of things, I'm sure, in his experience or where he grew up. Because you know he didn't grow up in a neighborhood where there were blacks as next door neighbors and that kind of thing. And so, no, does it surprise me? Does it seem to us today, it seems like a real inconsistency. But back then, no. You know, my parents were not prejudiced, and yet there were times where my parents would refer to someone who was a Southerner as a cracker. You know, my parents were too old to use the term honky, but they did use the term cracker. And so
I wonder where honky came from. Cracker, you can understand. Cracker is a white wafer.
Yeah,
but honky.
I wonder where that came from.
I think
about these things, Mel.
Yes, I have mused on this too. The only thing that honks is either a geese or a car horn. So I don't know what the
maybe
entomology
it was,
is.
Maybe it was geese can be white oftentimes, can't they? or I don't know. Are geese white? I don't know.
There has to be a reason for that term.
I was wondering before we go, what do you think Martin Luther King Jr. would do today with Donald Trump becoming president and obviously running a very divisive campaign to the White House, John Lewis making the decision, and now many African-American and other Democratic legislators are choosing not to go to the inauguration. Do you think Martin Luther King Jr., given the past 50-year history, would say, no, we are going and we're going to represent at the inauguration? Or would he have come right along with the Jesse Jacksons and the John Lewis's and the Al Sharptons of the world and been a super liberal Democrat as well?
I think that given his heart to facilitate race relationships, and think of how unreasonable Lester Maddox and all of the people that he sat down to talk with who hated him, that he would have bent over backwards to open the door for African Americans in any venue. So I think he would go to the inauguration. Now, do I think that if Trump said something that was outlandish, which unfortunately is a common occurrence, that he would then pull back from any kind of interaction with him or relationship with him? Absolutely not, because Martin Luther King had to know the kinds of things that LBJ was saying behind closed doors.
Absolutely. And what the movie shows and history shows, the All the Way movie about LBJ and his relationship with Martin Luther King Jr. and their fight to pass the civil rights legislation of the mid-60s, shows that even MLK Jr. had a compromise to get it done. And he was willing to do it for a higher purpose.
Yeah.
So,
and I think he would do that in this regard, too.
Well, Milt referenced the I Have a Dream speech earlier. Coming up in the Hour of Power, we are going to play the entire speech. Martin Luther King, I Have a Dream.
Your radio friend is on AM 1400 WRJN Racine, FM 98.1 Kenosha, and FM 99.9 Racine.
After WRJN covers the world on this Martin Luther King Jr. Day, it's 10:01.
Deadly winter weather. Trump tweets troll intel. I'm Evan Haining.